as millions of Americans observe the beginning of Holy Week this Palm Sunday, we are reminded that every life has purpose and none is without meaning.
That's Congressman James Sensenbrenner last night in the House debate, stretching late into the evening, ending in a vote over a bill that would give Terry Schindler Schiavo's parents one more legal crack at saving her life from her husband and guardian, who is determined, well, and has succeeded now three times in having her food and her hydration, food and water, removed from her. Now, the outcome of that is, as of yet, a little bit unsure. However, this debate has, this was keeping people late. This was keeping congressmen late. We're going to be getting an update on Terry Schindler Schiavo with Rita Marker here in this 25 minutes of issues, et cetera. Also, her reaction to some of the opponents of the bill, Congressman Debbie Wasserman in particular. We'll hear from her and get Rita's response in the course of this conversation. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727 for an update on Terry Schindler Schiavo. A little bit later in the program, Patty Skain of Missouri Right to Life will join us. Human cloning legislation in Missouri and human cloning legislation in Illinois with Bill Beckman of Illinois Right to Life a little later in the program. Rita Marker, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
It's obviously a busy time for you. What is the latest on the legal goings-on around Terry Schindler Schiavo?
Well, we know that the hearing at the federal court is over, but there's no ruling yet. And that is of great concern because every minute counts. Terry's been without food and water for over 75 hours and 20 minutes now. And that's a very, very ominous sign. And the fact that the judge apparently has not seen the urgency of this, although maybe I'm misreading it, but I'm very concerned about the fact that time is passing.
Now, the hearing was it the hearing or an announcement from the judge that was scheduled for 4 o'clock Eastern time, 3-hour time?
There was a 3 o'clock Eastern time hearing, and that hearing was to determine whether or not there would be an injunction related to the order that had actually resulted in the feeding tube being removed. You see, if the federal court is going to hear this, then an injunction can be requested that the whole situation be reversed and that Terry's feeding tube be put in based on two things. One, that there is a reasonable chance that they will prevail in the court, and secondly, that without doing that, there would be irreversible harm. And obviously, there would be irreversible harm to Terry if that feeding tube is not put back in immediately, because if the court says, well, we're going to hear this, but we're not going to put the feeding tube back in, then it's not going to be, should be dead before they decide. So this hearing today was just on whether or not there should be an injunction issued and whether the feeding tube should be put back in.
What is the expected result of that hearing then?
I don't have any idea. I know what the hoped-for result is, and that is that the judge says, yes, that we will take on this case, and the feeding tube should be put back in until the final determination is made. The judge could, however, say, I believe this to be unconstitutional, and I am not going to hear it, in which case then the attorneys go immediately to the Court of Appeals.
Give us a brief description of what went through Congress last night in these special sessions.
What went through Congress last night was a law that said courts have been deciding this, courts can continue to decide it. However, as is the case when there is a criminal who has killed someone, let's say a child molester who killed a child and has been condemned to death in a state court, that person then can seek a federal review of that state court decision before the execution is carried out. What Congress did was to say, okay, the state court has decided that Terry's life should be ended. But Terry, just like a criminal who has been judged to be guilty of capital murder, has the right to a federal court review. Terry Schiavo certainly has that right, too. The only crime that she has committed is the crime of being disabled. So it was not, as some people are saying, that Congress was making the decision. Instead, Congress was saying that Terry Schiavo deserves to have the federal court review this to make sure that her constitutional rights were upheld through all this process, that she should not have her life ended by starvation and dehydration until the federal court has reviewed that.
Folks, we will be opening up the phone lines in a few minutes for your thoughts on the Terry Schindler-Schiavo case as it unfolds. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Rita, let's listen to an opponent to the bill in debate last night. This is Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she said that the bill that was voted through last night didn't carry out Terry's real wishes.
We need to make sure that Terry's wishes are paramount here. And that is not what is going to be done if the United States Congress decides to act.
Rita, your reaction?
Well, my reaction is that that makes a nice soundbite on her part. However, the person that says that it is Terry's wish to be starved and dehydrated is her estranged husband, Michael, who did not remember that she would not want a feeding tube until 7 years after she was brain damaged. Now, just 2 years after the brain damage, after he had the money for the malpractice case and the money that was supposed to be for her care, which he has spent on trying to end her life, right then, as soon as the money was in the bank, he immediately ceased all rehabilitation for her, all therapy, and even such basic things as antibiotics. And he later acknowledged that he thought then that she would die of an infection. When she didn't die, he then recalled 5 years later that she wouldn't want food and fluids, because Terry has been clinging to life. She is what some people like the ethicist Arthur Kaplan refer to as biologically tenacious. She doesn't have the courtesy to die and get out of the way like some people would like her to do. The only way to make Terry dead was to remove her food and fluids. And so 7 years after the accident, 2 years or 5 years after he got the money that was going to care for her for the rest of her life, Michael remembered that she wouldn't want food and fluids by tube. Now, you hear someone like Debbie Wasserman, who was just quoted, saying that, oh, but he wasn't the only one. And he said on Larry King last week that her best friend and brother-in-law heard it too. Well, the so-called best friend that Michael forgot to mention was actually Michael's sister, who I question was her best friend. I had not heard her described that way before. So Michael said he heard this, and Michael's sister and her husband said they heard this. No one else had, and no one prior to that time had said Terry would not want to live like this. When Michael was begging and pleading for money to care for Terry, and he got a huge amount of money to care for Terry, he said that she had a normal life expectancy. He brought in experts who said that. He also said during that time when he was appearing before the jury that Terry responded to him and they communicated, and that he loved his wife and he would care for her for the rest of her life. He didn't bother to say that that would be a short life if he had anything to say about it. So this whole idea that it's carrying out Terry's wishes is just ludicrous.
Here again is Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She says that this bill and its parameters isn't Congress's job.
It remains inappropriate for the United States Congress or any legislative body to insert itself into a gut-wrenching, angst-ridden tragedy that should be between family members.
Rita, I was following a bit of the debate last night. That was repeated over and over again by opponents of the bill.
Oh, yes, and I, along with you, followed the whole debate. And it makes it sound as though someone is rushing into a living room where people are discussing things. But, you know, there are things that happen between family members that are the matter of law. You have spousal abuse, for gosh sakes. Nobody says, well, if that's going to occur, we shouldn't get in any way have the law involved in that, because that's just between spouses. You have child abuse. No one says, but that's within the family. So it's a specious argument to make. And given the fact that Michael is acting not in his capacity as husband, but in his capacity as a court-appointed guardian, you have someone who really has a legal obligation to be concerned about Terry's best interest and not to have any conflict of interest. Now, certainly this man who has been hell-bent on ending her life for all these years and who is living with another woman and has two children with that other woman, there's an inkling of a conflict of interest. And to say, that's none of our business, is ridiculous. I wonder if Ms. Wasserman Schultz would say, if she heard her neighbor screaming at being beaten by her husband, would say, oops, none of my business.
Folks, the phone lines are open now for your questions and comments on the Terry Schindler-Schiavo case, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Rita, here's one more cut from Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida during last night's House debate.
We don't have the expertise or the facts in enough detail to get into these kinds of decisions and make decisions on these kinds of cases. We're not God.
Is that true, Rita?
Well, the truth is that the Congress wasn't making the decision. She is implying that the congressional vote was determining what the final outcome in Terry's case would be. That wasn't what was happening. Congress has the right and indeed the obligation to determine what types of cases the federal courts will hear. All that Congress was doing is saying this case should be heard by a federal court. To imply that Congress was making a decision, that Congress was deciding whether Terry eventually should or should not have the feeding tube, was totally inaccurate. Congress was not playing God. Congress was not playing doctor. Congress was exercising its appropriate role as Congress and saying the federal court should exercise a review over this just like it would do if it were the case of a condemned criminal.
Our call-in number, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go to St. Louis and talk with Ruthie. Ruthie, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, thank you for paying such attention to this case. It's sickening to me. I read on the internet that someone is saying her parents didn't visit her for 5 years when she was early in this state and that they really didn't care about her, and I had not heard that anywhere. Is that true?
Thank you, Ruthie.
Absolutely not. That is definitely not true. Bob and Mary Schindler have visited Terry far, far, far more often than Michael Schiavo has. The only time when they have not visited her have been many times when Michael has barred them from visiting. And again, because he is the court-appointed guardian, he has the power to say who can and who cannot go and visit her. You may recall that yesterday for 4 hours he said they couldn't come in. He was angry, apparently, because Bob had taken a tape recorder in to record Terry's attempts to speak. And every time that Michael has gotten angry, he has then issued an order saying that Bob and Mary and Suzanne, her sister, and Bobby, her brother, could not come in. He also issued orders saying that her pastor could not come in. So the only time they have not visited is when Michael has issued orders barring them from visiting.
Janet calls from Collinsville. Janet, welcome to Issues, Etc. Janet, welcome.
First breath of life into a person is he who takes it out. I wonder how much life insurance he's got on her.
We don't know how much life insurance he has. That's something that his attorney has refused to divulge. And if indeed the federal court does hear this case, then they will be able to obtain that information. Judge Greer has never insisted that that be provided, and so there is no way to know. In fact, there's no way to know for certain how much money is really left in Terry's trust fund, although from figuring out how much Michael has spent to end Terry's life, it would seem that there's none, and her care is being covered now by Medicaid because she is indigent, because apparently the money is gone, but there is absolutely no way that we know how much or if any life insurance, because Michael and his attorney have refused to answer that.
I don't want to gauge too much in speculation on this front, but it does raise the question, Rita, whether or not that provides a reasonable explanation to the often asked question, why doesn't Michael simply divorce Terry? If he has a life insurance policy on her as his wife, he can't really do that. He can't do it and still collect.
Well, that's true, but the more cynical, but I think the more realistic way to look at it is you're looking at a person in Michael Schiavo and his attorney, George Filos, who has always loved the camera and has written a book even called Litigation as Spiritual Practice, which is an absolutely ludicrous book, but has always been a publicity seeker. And I would be willing to bet the farm and my firstborn that they are looking forward to book and movie rights on this. If Michael were to divorce Terry and walk away, those book and movie rights would not be what they will be if he succeeds in dehydrating Terry to death. And each time that something new occurs, such as the bill that was passed last night, it ratchets up the value of those book and movie rights.
Rita Marker is our guest. We're getting an update on Terry Schindler Schiavo. She's executive director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide based in Steubenville, Ohio. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. From Houston, Texas, Lisa is calling. Lisa, welcome.
Hello. I was just thinking, Logan's Run, the science fiction movie where everyone died at 35 because they're inconvenient, is sure a lot less unrealistic.
Lisa, thank you very much. What is has this whole question of inconvenience been posed to Michael Schiavo? Is it just because it's costing him money to keep her alive?
It's not costing him a penny to keep her alive. It's not costing him any money because she is now, her care is now being paid for by the state because he has said there's no money left in the trust fund for her. Remember that hundreds of thousands of dollars were awarded for her rehabilitation and for her therapy. And that was 2 years after her brain damage. Michael did not use any of that money for that purpose. None of the therapy or rehabilitation that people say that she has received occurred after the money was in the bank. So he says that all of that money is gone, and so her care is being paid for by state Medicaid. It is not being paid for by Michael. He has nothing coming out of his pocket for this.
Larry is calling from his car. Larry, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, yeah, I was calling in. What I was calling about, I was just curious as to what the difference is in Congress intervening now in this case than when the insurance companies deny treatment to someone and they die, and Congress doesn't see a problem with that.
Thank you, Larry. Rita.
Well, I certainly think that there is a problem with that, and I think that there should be lawsuits related to that. And as an attorney who works with very low-income people, I know that that is a real problem. And we have to work to make sure that people do get medical care that they need and want. And we also have to make sure that people cannot be denied care because there is some little loophole in the very, very, very fine print.
A couple of things I'd like your reaction to. First of all, in the local paper here, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Illinois edition, under the headline, Busalaki says effort by Congress is absurd. This is Peter Busalaki, mm-hmm. the father of Christine Busalaki, who died in 1993. He fought a two-year battle to have her feeding tube removed after a terrible car accident she was in. He says this, and I'd like your reaction. Peter Busalaki says of the Schiavo case, this has reached the absurd for the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate to join the fray. People are throwing themselves into a fray about which they know very little.
Well, you know, having been involved in the Busalaki case years ago, I really would not take Peter Busalaki's word as to what should or should not be done. In fact, Christine Busalaki's life was being protected by both the people at the care facility where she had lived and by then-Governor Ashcroft. And it looked as though Christine was going to be able to get the therapy she needed and that her life was going to be protected. However, then when Carnahan ran for election, he made that part of his platform. And the day that he was elected, the day he was inaugurated, he directed that the state no longer be involved in the case, because up until then, the state, as the state, had been protecting her. And that's why Christine Busalaki is dead. Otherwise, she would still be alive.
The other quote in the story comes from the Reverend Charles Bouchard. He's president of the Aquinas Institute of Theology here in St. Louis, and he's a professor of moral theology. He writes this, Terry Schiavo has become a pawn in a political battle that is not really about end-of-life treatment, but about abortion. Your response?
Well, my response is preserve us from moral theologians and bioethicists. I think that what he has said is made a very political statement there. This is a case about a young woman who is very vulnerable, a young woman whose husband is an estranged husband who holds all power and authority over her and who is determined to make sure that she dies, who has said that he will not even permit her to have food by mouth, to have water by mouth, even though the very doctors who have said that she should die have acknowledged she could take food by mouth. So for the moral theologian to say this is about abortion is really ridiculous. I think that it's unfortunate that he does not recognize that there is a living, breathing, vulnerable woman there who needs protection.
Kathy calls from St. Charles. Kathy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I would like to know if you would please comment on what her case would mean for people with disability and where we might be going in the future if someone like Terry is not allowed to have the life and help, life support and help that she needs because she is vulnerable.
Rita.
The point you're making about disability rights and people with disabilities is the key to all of this, because it is the fact that Terry is a disabled woman and that people are saying, ah, because she is a disabled woman, then her life is not worth anything. That's really key to this, and that's why people with disabilities are so very, very, very concerned about this. Those who want to end her life try to dehumanize her, and they don't like using the words disability, but that's exactly what we have here, a very severely disabled woman who has a severe brain damage. And you have people saying, oh, I wouldn't want to live like that. Therefore, she should have her life ended. And that is truly ominous. You know, if people are interested, they could go up to our website, internationaltaskforce.org. We have right on the home page an article that appeared yesterday in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette called Starving for the Truth that gives a very, very good perspective from the disability rights angle on this, because this truly is a case of disability rights and should be chilling for anyone who has a disability and for all of us who are at least temporarily able-bodied. Mm-hmm. Any one of us could be disabled tomorrow. And I think we ought to look at this and say, wait a minute, what does this mean?
Rita, finally, with only about 30 seconds, I heard an interview this weekend about this case. The question was asked of a reporter. Look, feeding tubes are removed every day in hospitals and nursing homes. How is Terry's situation any different from those? And the answer was, well, it's because she's a cause celeb.
Now, there's several things to look at here. The person was right. Feeding tubes are removed every day in hospitals and nursing homes, often because nobody cares. In nursing homes, there are a lot of people who are receiving food by feeding tube who actually were able to eat by mouth, but it was easier for the nursing home to put in a feeding tube because it's less time-consuming and risky to feed someone by tube. Then after they've been fed by feeding tube, someone could say, well, that's a feeding tube. We can remove it.
About 30 seconds here, Rita.
And the other thing is that if someone is truly dying and if their body is not assimilating food and fluids, if actually continuing to put the food and fluids in is not doing anything that it should do, but in fact making the person uncomfortable, in that case, with a truly dying person whose body is shutting down, then the food and fluids wouldn't be doing them any good, and no one would say you have to put in a feeding tube.
Rita Marker, thank you for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
Folks, I'm going to give you a website address where you can stay informed. Rita just mentioned it. You can stay informed and updated on the case of Terry Schindler Schiavo, internationaltaskforce.org. It's all one word, internationaltaskforce.org. It's the website for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. When we come back, we're going to get an update on Missouri cloning legislation with Patty Skane.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The primary task of the Christian preacher is to deliver Christ himself to sinners. Christ's perfect obedience, his suffering, his death, his rest in the tomb, his resurrection and ascension for sinners. Christ in holy baptism, Christ in the Lord's Supper, Christ in the word of forgiveness for sinners. You'll find example after example of this Christ-centered, cross-focused preaching in our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March, selected sermons of Dr. Norman Nagel from Valparaiso to St. Louis. This book is $24.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. In his Senate confirmation hearing to become head of the FDA,
Lester Crawford was hammered by abortion advocates over the agency's handling of the controversial emergency contraception drug Plan B. Stuart Shepard reports.
Plan B has been criticized because of its potential to cause an early abortion and because of concerns it may encourage promiscuity, especially among teens. Senator Hillary Clinton said the delay in approving over-the-counter sales appears to be a dangerous slide into political opinion rather than scientific evidence.
The fact that they are complaining about the time factor, you know, seems to indicate that they are not really concerned, primarily concerned about the FDA doing its job in ensuring that women's health is primary.
Daniel McConkie is with Americans United for Life.
But rather in pursuing their political agenda of trying to make sure that people are able to abort the very earliest of embryos with just by taking a drug and after having unprotected sex. It's really disturbing.
Nonetheless, the prospective FDA chief Lester Crawford said the science part of approval is generally done and indicated over-the-counter sales are not far off. Pia De Seleni with the Family Research Council.
We really still don't know the effects of this drug on women, and that can only be known after long-term studies have been done. We haven't had the physical time to do that since the drug was even introduced to the FDA.
She wonders why the drug is even being considered for sale without a prescription, since real-life studies show over-the-counter sales have no impact on the rate of abortion. For Family News in Focus, I'm Stuart Shepard.
Large-scale studies indicate that over-the-counter sales of the drug make no difference to the pregnancy rate compared to women who got it from a doctor. The FDA delayed approving over-the-counter sales because of a lack of scientific data. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
On the next Midday Living Jubilee, the last live one of this week on AM 850 KFUO, join Joni Harwell and me, Diane Summers. We'll talk with John Pless about handling the Word of God, and Mark Sangele, also from CPH, will talk about a book of devotionals called This Faith Is Mine. We'll also talk with W. Dale Kramer about Bad Ground. It's a novel. It might be worth your attention. On the next Living Jubilee on AM 850 KFUO.
Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March features sermons preached by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Norman Nagel and is titled Selected Sermons of Norman Nagel. It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Selected Sermons of Norman Nagel on our website, issuesetc.org. Selected Sermons of Norman Nagel, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're right in the middle of our 3 hours. Patty Skane is waiting, and we're going to be talking to her about human cloning legislation in Missouri. That'll be followed by a conversation with Bill Beckman of Illinois Right to Life. Human cloning legislation in Illinois to the tune of $1 billion in bonds that would pay to have human cloning research brought to Illinois. They consider it an economic boon, and we're doing good. We're going to find cures and things like that. We'll find out whether that's true with Bill Beckman in just a few minutes here on Issues Etc. In the third hour of the program, open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll be doing our weekly sermon review. Robert Schuller, his Hour of Power, a short sermon where he does preach the cross. We'll see whether he preaches the cross as good news for sinners. Patty Skane is our guest here for the next few minutes. She's executive director of Missouri Right to Life, and we're going to be talking about human cloning legislation in the state of Missouri. Patty, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on.
Then what is the latest when it comes to human cloning legislation in Missouri?
Well, here in Missouri, luckily, we're not talking about funding issues as they are in some other states, but we're really just trying to ban the actual procedure of cloning in Missouri, and that's not meeting with a lot of success, unfortunately, so far.
Now, some people would wonder at that, because as often as we've talked with you, Patty, it sounds as though Missouri is a leader in the pro-life movement and has been very bold, at least the legislature of late, to pass all sorts of pro-life legislation. Why is human cloning bogged down?
Well, obviously, there's a difference of opinion. We of course think that this is definitely a pro-life issue, and that embryonic stem cell research should not be taking place and that when they do cloning for the purposes of embryonic stem cell research, they're destroying life in the research, and therefore this is very much a pro-life issue. Unfortunately, some legislators who traditionally have been pro-life disagree with that, and they've been convinced by the research industry that, in fact, this type of cloning does not, or this procedure, they call it, they don't even acknowledge that it's cloning, but that it does not create a human being, in spite of the, you know, a multitude of evidence that, in fact, this is human life, and a number of testimonies, et cetera, from medical and research personnel that testify that, in fact, it is human life. But the research company has pretty much convinced some of these legislators that it's not human life, and therefore when you end it or you harvest these embryonic stem cells, or they call them early stem cells, that you're not destroying life.
Patty, how much is this a dollars and cents thing, or I should say a big dollars thing, since California recently passed a bill that would provide $3 billion, and some say that the bill will actually come to $6 billion when they're all said and done with it, of taxpayer money to fund embryonic stem cell research. That's got to look good to anybody who wants business in their state.
Well, and then, of course, it's kind of two different issues in a way. I mean, that in that state and in some states, you're talking about actual state funding of the research. That's not an issue here right now, luckily. And so there's that issue, but there's also the issue of economic development in your state and how much money it will just bring into the state as far as setting up these research institutes and how much development there will be. I mean, you set up a research institute, you're going to have business for construction companies and all kinds of other different entities that will help develop those research institutes, and so it brings money into the state. And so the issue, unfortunately, for some legislators is the economic issue of how much it will bring into the state, just in commerce and that kind of thing, not so much just the federal or the state funding of the research.
How much has what we hear so often in other states when they're talking about banning human cloning, the counterfeit clone ban, which is usually called a clone and kill bill, how much has that been a factor in Missouri?
Well, so far not too much. We did hear that there might be an effort to make the total ban into just a what they call a reproductive cloning ban. And unfortunately, the problem there is, of course, that the cloning procedure is all the same. It doesn't matter whether you're cloning in order to do research on it or you're cloning in order to implant the clone in a womb and carry it to term and have a baby born. It's still the same procedure. The only differentiation is whether you clone and kill and harvest the stem cells or you clone and implant and actually attempt to have a baby born. But it's still the same procedure. And so right now we haven't had any bills filed that would be a fraudulent kind of cloning ban, or that would be, you know, they've had some states like New Jersey that tried to say that they were, in fact, banning cloning. But theirs is even more horrendous, because as long as you implant this clone and put it in a womb, you can carry it up to 9 months. You just can't give birth to it. I mean, that's even worse. But and so there are all kinds of attempts to mislead the public, and it's a very difficult educational issue. People need to get themselves educated on it and be understand the issue, because it is very complicated.
Patty, finally, how confident are you that Missouri will, as it has of late and more recently, show itself a leader in among the 50 states in the pro-life issue and have a total ban on human cloning on the books as law?
Well, it's going to be an uphill battle. I think the thing that everybody needs to know is that this is a primary issue with Missouri Right to Life. It's a primary issue with other conservative groups. We all came together for a lobby day a couple of weeks ago, and this is not going to go away. I mean, no matter whether we succeed this session, it's going to happen again next session, and it will continue to happen because Missouri Right to Life has always tried to work on the piece of legislation that would save the most lives, whether that was an informed consent bill to stop more abortions or whatever it is. Our primary piece of legislation was a piece of legislation that would stop the most lives. And, you know, other pieces of legislation sort of took second place to that. And unfortunately, and what we see right now is that this bill is the bill. We can't do much more in the abortion issue because the courts won't let us right now. But this is the place where the most lives are at stake and the most lives are vulnerable. And that's why this is the piece of legislation that we need to go after and continue to go after whether we succeed this session or not.
Patty, before we let you go, Patty, Jim is calling from his car. Jim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Jeff, Todd, good afternoon. I appreciate Patty Skain and Missouri Right to Life and all their work that they've done on behalf of this issue. I, of course, introduced the bill in the Missouri House, House Bill 457, and we are, as Patty mentioned, up against a great group of opposition as far as getting a ban on human cloning in Missouri. And that opposition is coming from an unlikely source, the governor's mansion, who, of course, is a pro-life governor, and the leaders in both the speaker's office and the speaker pro tem in the Senate. So I would encourage your listeners, to be active as far as calling their legislators, their senators and representatives, and the governor's office to let them know that this is an important piece of legislation and that we do want to protect human life and the embryos that are created through this process of somatic cell nuclear transfer. It's very important that the people be heard on this issue.
Jim, before I let you go, how effective was, I understand that Wesley Smith, the regular guest on our program, appeared before a Missouri committee on this. How effective was his testimony?
Well, Wesley is very articulate on this issue. The balance between the ethics of the issue and then the science of the issue. I've often said, Todd, on this issue, the science of this issue is easy. It's the ethics of this issue that's hard. You know, both sides will admit that there is no doubt about the biology that a new life is created. The opposition to our bill is saying this is definitely biologically a human life, but what they're saying is it's not the same type of human life, and that if you implant it in a womb, theoretically, it won't produce a baby. But that's just not the truth of the matter. The science is on our side, and I think Wesley Smith and other ethicists, you know, within the research community are saying this is not something we want to pursue and not a road we want to go down.
Patty, you may recognize the voice of Jim Lemke, Rep. Jim Lemke from the St. Louis area. Your response?
Well, I think he's absolutely right, and that is obviously, in spite of what we're up against, we need to continue to call the governor's office. We need to continue to call our legislators and the president pro tem of the Senate and the speaker of the House. Unfortunately, we were making some progress with the Senate bill, but as of today, the Senate calendar is showing it in the informal calendar, which usually means that the bill is dead. The House bill, unfortunately, we can't even get a hearing on. That's kind of a problem, we're just trying to educate the legislators and let them know that this is not an issue that's going to go away, and that the pro-life people in Missouri don't agree with the research industry, and they don't agree with the legislators that are siding with the research industry. And this is an issue that's not going to go away, and, you know, any research company that wants to land in, and already has landed in Missouri and wants to grow here, they need to know that we're not going to stop and we're not going to back off of this.
The website address for Missouri Right to Life is missourilife.org, missourilife.org. Patty Skain is Executive Director of Missouri Right to Life. Patty, thanks for being our guest.
All right, thanks very much.
On the Illinois side, you may have read the headline in Friday's paper, Voting on Stem Cell Funding Advances. It's talking about what's going on in Springfield, Illinois. Joining us to talk about this article and its contents, also the $1 billion bond issue on stem cell research in Illinois. Bill Beckman, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. Bill, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd.
What should I understand from this Friday story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Voting on Stem Cell Funding Advances?
Well, there was a bill that's in committee in both the House and the Senate, and the Senate bill was in a very favorable committee. As a matter of fact, of the 7 votes that it received in that committee, 5 of the members of that committee are sponsors of the bill. And it was a vote along party lines, with all Republicans voting no and the 7 Democrats voting yes, that the bill is now going to be slated for a vote on the Senate floor. But last year on the Senate floor, the senators were not very receptive to a similar bill, which did not include funding, and there's many other issues being raised by this funding referendum that you spoke of here, basically to authorize the $1 billion of bonds. There's part of the legislation is requiring a ballot in the 2006 general election to see if the voters will approve this bond issue. And this is also is supposed to be then generate the money to be generated by a 6% tax on cosmetic surgery. So that's also a controversial point. So there's substantial controversy, and I think at this point in time, it's too early to know how the senators are leaning, but there's going to be a substantial amount of activity to educate the senators on the nature of this bill, and I don't know that at this point in time there's any expectation that it's likely to pass.
Daniel Hines, he's Illinois comptroller, is quoted in the Post-Dispatch story saying, "I really believe the financial issues can be addressed, and that would leave us only to the issue of whether this is the type of research the state should invest in, whether it is ethical and moral." He says, "I believe that this is research that can save lives and do so in a moral and ethical way and a responsible way." Your response?
Well, the problem is that he's overlooking the fact that human embryos are created and then killed as part of what he's describing as this research. So it's a very utilitarian view of human life. Unfortunately, there are a number of people that have said that these human lives are not equal, and that therefore they can be sacrificed and with the possibility of achieving these medical goals.
Now, you said that the prospects for this funding bill don't seem good. Given the fact that Illinois has a hard time passing any pro-life legislation, how is it that the prospects aren't so good?
Well, the situation in the Senate is very interesting because there's a significant number of downstate pro-life Democrats who are in a position to, under normal circumstances, to come together with pro-life Republicans from around the state and to stop a significant number of legislation that we would view as very anti-life. And so we're going to be counting on that same kind of a coming together, a bipartisan spirit, to come together to oppose these bills, or this particular bill, and to prevent the Senate from passing it. And we're hoping that particular coalition can come together again this legislative session, as it did for what was called HB 3589, which was certainly a very controversial bill on the subject of stem cell research, but didn't even have any of the financial aspects in it, which again makes it that much more controversial this time around.
The argument seems to be behind a lot of this is, look, there's this gigantic pool of research money out there that is any state's for the taking. California, boom, they grab $3 billion of it. At least they're willing to spend that much to bring in what they consider to be, they're going to consider to be more profitable for them. Lately, people have heard about the fact that other states are offering tax breaks, free housing for researchers, you name it, all over the place. And the argument in Illinois probably is made in the case of, well, we're going to miss out. That's a finite amount of money, and if we let all the other states take it, we will miss out on an economic boon. Your response?
Well, the irony is that in all the cases, the place where the money's flowing from is from the taxpayers. The situation out in California is that effectively that all these bonds will ultimately have to be paid back, and the money will be obtained from the taxpayers. It's somewhere down the road. So And the same thing would be true here in Illinois, whether it be from an immediate use of a new 6% tax on cosmetic surgery, or the fact that that didn't generate enough money, that ultimately those bonds would have to be paid off from tax revenue that would be taken from whether it be the income tax or the sales tax from the citizens of Illinois. So the irony of all this is that the money is only flowing if they can manage to convince the taxpayers or avoid the taxpayers knowing that they've made these commitments at the time they make them.
Senator Jeff Schoenberg of Evanston says this in the story, "My sense is that an overwhelming majority of people who live in Illinois want to help researchers find cures."
That seems to ignore the question of sources of cures. I mean, in other words, we know that that adult stem cell research, including, you know, that use of that term in a very broad fashion, which includes the stem cells from umbilical cord blood and other sources that are don't involve the killing of embryos, have already demonstrated, you know, substantial effectiveness in producing real cures for real people, whereas embryonic stem cells have not so far produced any cures for any real people. And that the efforts to continue this research and ignore the fact that there's a substantial progress going on with the adult stem cells, which we have absolutely no opposition to. If they had a bill that said they're going to try to figure out ways to generate more funds for adult stem cells and promote those, then we'd be happy. You know, but we disagree with the killing of embryos to achieve research goals.
Would a federal ban on all human cloning, I know it's a little bit of a pipe dream, but would that solve the problem for the individual states?
Well, it would certainly go a long way because, effectively, you know, there might be some intermediate research that could continue, but ultimately this research does require cloning to achieve its ultimate goal, because if they ever did find any kind of potential cure, they would have to overcome the mismatch of tissue, and the way they would attempt to do that would be by cloning the individual that needs the treatment so as to basically achieve, you know, obtaining stem cells that could actually help that individual.
We've had many guests on, Bill, who tell us the reason that the research in embryonic stem cell research is the reason that they're going to taxpayers, states, all the trying to get federal money, trying to get state money, is because the private money for this research just isn't there.
Right, because the private investors have recognized where success can be achieved, and they're not willing to invest in places where there's going to be ultimate failure. They're voting with their feet and voting in favor of research that will be the winners, not research that's basically, you know, already demonstrated that it's not going anywhere.
So I guess I'm sitting in Illinois State House, and I'm just trying to do the math just in terms of where the money goes and where the smart money is going. And I'm saying, look, if private investors are not willing to get behind, and private money is not willing to get behind this research, why should we spend taxpayer money to get behind this research? The private sector generally tends to operate on self-interest and the wisdom of whether or not it can make a buck. And
right.
I don't see the upside for our state.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, the only way that this can be achieved and justified with taxpayers is by making taxpayers confused or keeping them ignorant about the actual issues involved and the actual trade-off between the two types of research, so that effectively they think that they're voting for the only alternative available and they want to make sure that those cures are available for their relatives and the future generations. But if they actually know the facts, and we're going to obviously be attempting to make sure that they do, but effectively, then we don't believe that the public would ever support this kind of a waste of taxpayer money.
Has Governor Blagojevich said anything about this $1 billion bond issue for stem cell research?
I don't recall any specific quotes, but I have a strong suspicion that he's going to be strongly behind it if it would ever get to his desk, I mean, you know, which we're, again, hoping won't happen.
Bill Beckman is Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. Bill, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you very much, Todd.
The website for Illinois Right to Life, illinoisrighttolife.org. It's all one word, illinoisrighttolife.org. Why do we do an entire hour? Is it just because it's newsworthy? I mean, we've got stories in the paper. Terry Schindler's Schiavo remains on the top of everyone's, in the top of everyone's mind and the tip of everyone's tongue. Why do we do this? No, there's a long-term goal here, and that is defending life from beginning to end. This is why we When the Terry Schindler Schiavo story is gone, we continue to defend life from beginning to end. And this is why we've been talking about it long before you heard about it on, well, Rush Limbaugh decided to talk about it finally today, and others have been talking about it for maybe a month or two. This is why we've been discussing Terry Schindler Schiavo and these other related issues for a long, long time before you read about it in the paper. We're interested in defending life from beginning to end, as we know you are as well. We want you to stand with us in that defense of life from beginning to end by considering becoming a member of our Issues Etc. Reformation Club. This is our monthly donor program. Three levels of giving: the confessor, the apologist, the reformer. For more information on the benefits of those levels of giving in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, go to our website. Books, tapes, transcripts await the members of our Issues Etc. Reformation Club. You can call our resource line number and join by credit card, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. Our goal is 125 members by Easter. Easter's coming up this Sunday, by the way. We're well on our way. 1-800-737-0172. You can also join by check. Write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, or join online at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Scroll down on the homepage, look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses, click on it, and you can become a member of the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, help this worldwide outreach, and help us defend life from beginning to end. When we come back from this break, our weekly sermon review, Robert Schuller, Sr., preaches a brief sermon based upon a book that he has written. It's his latest bestseller. The book is called Don't Throw Away Tomorrow. His sermon today, this is from The Hour of Power on Sunday. You may have seen it. Dealing with Our Contradictions. Now, this is one you're going to have to listen carefully to for two reasons. One, it's a very brief sermon. I don't know why he preaches so briefly, but he does at this point. A very short sermon. So you're going to have to listen carefully. And he does pack a lot in there, in amongst his stories and his name dropping and all the other things that Schuller does. He actually preaches the cross, the crucifixion, and the resurrection. Now, here's the question I have for you. We've been doing these sermon reviews for months now on Issues Etc., using our little three-part diagnostic tool. We'll go back over it again on the other side of the break. But basically, looking for Jesus in these sermons, listening for the cross, listening for the message of the cross, the forgiveness of sins, the good news that is the gospel. Is it there? Because it has to be there if it's going to be a Christian sermon. It has to be Christ-centered, cross-focused. Now, I'll tell you in advance that Robert Schuller will preach the cross. The question is, and this is will require discernment on the part of the listener, does he preach the cross as good news, the way that Scripture presents the cross as good news, as the forgiveness of sins because of Christ's sacrifice at the cross? Or does he preach the cross as something else? This isn't a trick question, folks. I want you to listen for it. I want your answer for this after we hear Robert Schuller's sermon from The Hour of Power on the other side of this break. Stay tuned. It's Open Lines next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.